Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today, I'm very honored to have our special guest, Jay Cruz. Hello, Jay.
Good day, Ron. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, a pleasure. Jay is my producer. Today, I get to interview him, which is awesome. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's been broadcasting since 1984, which I guess is 40 years, Jay, when he was a college DJ and a three-sport play-by-play announcer. An internship while he was still in college opened the doors for him to pursue his dream of being a professional rock radio DJ, where he worked in the San Francisco and San Jose markets until industry consolidation in the late 1990s forced him to pursue new dreams. And that led you to moving to the beach cities of Los Angeles. And in 2002, he was hired as program director for Healthy Life Radio. And for the past 22 years, Jay has been host, news anchor, and overall show producer for the majority of shows on Healthy Life Radio. And he uses his background to help coach, lead, and teach the current hosts at the network as they produce their shows. And I can attest that Jay has given me a lot of help in this regard. And then in his spare time, Jay is a bass player and narrates audiobooks. So welcome, Jay.
Thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
It is. As you know, because you, I think, listen to most of my shows, all of my shows, I think you hear at some point, I love to hear how people got into their careers because I counsel a lot of young adults and older teens. So did you always know you wanted to be a play-by-play announcer, or when did it dawn on you that's something you want to do?
Yeah, definitely sports as a very young kid was something that really kind of, you know, through my father, it was an avenue into a way to speak with adults. I watched sports on TV, and then my dad would have friends over, and they would be talking mostly football, and then I would start chiming in, and the friends of my dad were quite impressed that I, knew so much about the sports and what was really happening for a youngster. So that really inspired me to stay on top of it and continue learning. So I've, that really helped me gain confidence in being able to speak to adults, which also helped with others. And I always enjoyed music and sports, listened to them on the radio, and was influenced by the broadcasters. And at some point in my early teens, my voice dropped and radio seemed like a viable option.
Wow. So you knew pretty early on. Where did you go to college?
A college in the San Francisco Bay Area in Los Altos Hills called Foothill College. It's a community college, not a big university or state college. However, they had a great college radio station that just before I joined them had done this big special that got national attention called the Maximum Louie Louie Special, in which they found there's over 2,000 versions of bands that had covered the song by the Kingsmen, Louie Louie. And they had this big Louie Louie marathon, which, you know, sort of made me notice them. But also I had called up a lot of local radio DJs and asked them where they got their start. And a lot of them had started at Foothill College. The tuition was cheaper. The radio station was very, very well run. And its broadcast tower was on the highest point in the San Francisco Bay Area. So a 216-watt station was able to broadcast better than big paid-for commercial radio stations in many cases. So it was an inexpensive way to get in there, get trained with a great program that was very hands-on. and saved me a lot of college tuition.
That is really funny. You'll be surprised to know that I attended Foothill College and when I was in high school. I took an astronomy class and a writing class at
Wow.
our local community college. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, cool. Yeah, and it's a highly ranked place, you know. I also got some I wasn't really cracking the books on the other subjects. I went there specifically for radio, and I took some general ed as well.
Fine. So when you finished Foothill College, how hard was it to land your first job? How'd that work?
First job, not so hard. First on-air job, a little more difficult. I was working my way up at the college station. I eventually became, pretty early on, I was sports director, partly of my interest and also the lack of interest for most of the other staff members. Again, you know, junior college sports, not something people want to do. Well, college sports, yeah, people want to do that. That's popular. But JC sports, not so much. You know, that's for, you know, athletes that are, you know, maybe trying to get to the next level and maybe, you know, trying to get to a scholarship level or what have you. But I, you know, went into that, and then soon after, the program director asked me to be his assistant. Then when he stepped down, I became the program director there. But during somewhere in that period, the station was contacted by a local rock station called KSJO in San Jose, and they needed a morning intern for their brand new morning radio show to come in and screen phone calls, because that was a time when they had made a hiring to get in a new morning guy who was a bit more of a entertainer, shall we say, and that format in radio had been traditionally, you know, FM rock station didn't have the morning zoo, if you will. So the station knew there would be some backlash and eventually some new fans. And my first, you know, thing was to screen phone calls to make sure that this person is good to come on the air, or make sure that this person is, you know, a disgruntled listener and we don't let them on the air. And through that process, I was also hired to do some sports board op with the AM affiliate station, which ran San Jose State Sports. So I was able to do that. But to get on the air, it took about another year or two of continuing my college radio show, making audition tapes. Luckily, I had access to, you know, professional broadcasters who gave me good tips. And then I eventually got my first on-air job in Monterey. And I knew that because that station, KSJO, had just hired someone to do weekends from Monterey. So I figured, hey, there's an opening at her old station, so I'm going to send my tape down there.
So you had to send an audition tape? Is that what you did?
Yeah. Either taking, like, a copy of, you know, one of my shows, or for the Monterey station, I, you know, drove to Santa Cruz, which is about an hour drive from San Jose, took my radio boombox, put in a cassette tape, and recorded, record about two tapes, 45 minutes, you know, both sides, which is an hour and a half of what the station was doing, enough to hear what the DJ was doing, and then I kind of rewrote what he had done and sort of sent them a tape, you know, kind of letting them know how I might sound on their station, and then B, I also know how to pick apart radio formats. I was pretty surprised. They didn't call me right away, but when they did call me, they needed me right away. So, you know, 8 months later, hurry up and wait, and now we need you right away. So that's how it goes sometimes. You get, you get the answer later than you expect, but it comes when you need it.
There you go. Now take us behind the scenes. I've been to a radio station a couple of times, but describe what a radio station looks like on the inside, like where you're the DJ. Are you the only one there? How does it work?
Most often you are. In the two stations I had been at this point, the AM-FM, they were both AM-FM combo stations. So at times there was somebody who would be in there, you know, watching the board for the AM station. A lot of it was automated in both cases. And, you know, so there'd be somebody else kind of watching the other station, and there'd be maybe, you know, three doors down the hall or part of it. But for the most part, if you're doing, you know, anything after business hours, you know, after 5 or 6 p.m., you're more than likely going to be there by yourself with maybe, you know, one other person working on something else, or occasionally other jocks might, you know, drop in because they have to do voiceovers for commercials. So, but still, most of the time you're by yourself. And on days like Christmas, you're totally by yourself. No one wants to come in on the holidays.
And so, did you ever have a problem with, like, emergencies, adopt air, or what happened? Can you tell us about a situation that was not planned for?
Well, there's always emergency numbers if the, you know, in those days, if the transmitter would have a problem. You know, we used to have to take meter readings every 3 hours, and those were extremely important. You know, if you actually forgot to take your meter reading, you would have to, it'd be like missing a homework assignment, and, you know, the production director or whoever would sometimes go, hey, you got to come back and re-sign this, even though you obviously didn't take the meter reading, just kind of put in a number that it should be. And sometimes we would have to be responsible for sending out the old FCC emergency broadcast alert. Sometimes they would just randomly appear, and within a 15, 20 minutes, some form of timely fashion, we would be responsible for transmitting that emergency broadcast alert. So those are things that kind of did happen, and occasionally during inclement weather, either very hot, very cold, transmitters could have issues, and in that case, I really hate to call you engineer at 11:30 on a Saturday night, but transmitter's down, and that's what I'm told to do. So, yeah, there was a few times, and, you know, you hate to make that call to the management or the boss, you know, when something goes down, but that's protocol, and, you know, you bite the bullet and you go, hey, I know you don't want to get a call from me at 11:30 at night, but this is what's happening.
And during that time, it's dead air. What happens to the listeners?
If the transmitter actually does go off, there were some steps to try to bring it up. And if that didn't work, then, you know, the engineer would be, you know, he might be sleeping, he might be doing whatever. But now all of a sudden, he's got to get on his high horse and maybe go up to the transmitter. And the station, you know, could possibly be down for a little while. Although that only happened very short amounts of time, very briefly, and occasionally there would be scheduled time for maintenance in which it would normally happen like Sunday night into Monday morning, you know, when the least amount of people are listening. And there were times I was doing that shift, and I'd come in to go to work, and then get there, and I'd go, oh, the engineers are here, and they'd be like, yeah, we're gonna be down till 2 a.m., so, you know, grab a book, hang out, and you're like, oh, great, I can't go to sleep, but I have to stay awake and make sure this is happening. But you're still on the clock, and occasionally maintenance did happen, and we just had to deal with it. But it is usually scheduled in very late at night and middle of the nights at times when the least amount of listeners were affected.
How long a shift, radio shift, would you have?
They would go anywhere from 3 to 5 or 6 hours, 6 hours being the longest, and that would normally be an overnight, like a midnight to 6. Generally, the average was about 3 or 4 hours, sometimes 5.
Now, as a rock radio jock, this DJ, do you pick what songs you're going to play, or how does that work?
Well, for the most part, I did get some freedom and a little bit of allowance to, you know, picked songs if, you know, the boss was always cool if, like, a listener had called in and you got a good phone call with a listener going, hey, I like what you're doing, but can you play this? And, you know, then you'd record the phone call and then play the song they want to hear. Other than that, we pretty much had playlists to go by and, you know, maybe pick whatever classic rock album is your favorite by maybe one of your favorite bands. And there's probably only about 3 or 4 songs from each album in history that stations played or continued to play. So it's also a matter of knowing what the station plays and not going too crazy and playing something super obscure, even though it might be from a band that everybody knows. And occasionally with some of those bands, there were different blocks during the day. Like we had a nightly, you know, Led Zeppelin. It was called Get the Lead Out every night at 6, you know, 4 Led Zeppelin songs. And in that case, you know, I could get a little deep and maybe pick something, you know, from them that wasn't normally played, because it was a special feature in a, you know, band that was, you know, very well known. But for the most part, playlists are there, and nowadays playlists are absolutely there all the music at any station you listen to now is preloaded and runs on automation. So, you know, those DJs just kind of talk, you know, over the intros and the records, but they're not picking the music. It's picked for them, and they just sort of, you know, talk where they're supposed to, which, you know, we did, but we actually queued up CDs and albums. Now it's all digital and on a computer.
Who develops the playlist then? Is it
a combination of the music director and program director? Much of it is based off, I'm going to make a sports analogy here, which I often do. If you're watching a football game and maybe the team's quarterback is, you know, not the greatest, that team's going to run the ball right up the middle all the time because they don't have confidence in their quarterback. That's kind of what you hear on radio. It is very safe. Radio programmers do not want to take a chance. That's why there's a playlist, and those stations invest a lot of money in research companies that give them data off what they've gleaned from supposedly radio listeners. Back in the day, you might get a random phone call, and they're like, hey, we're from such and such music service. Can we ask you a couple questions about your favorite songs and station? And people normally would be kind of cool with that because they go, yeah, I like music. I get to, you know, take part in a little survey. And, you know, the answers from those surveys depended or, you know, were pretty much influential on the songs that were played and not played. And they would ask you questions like, have you heard this song? Yes or no. Do you like this song? Yes or no. Or, you know, are you sick of this song? Yes or no. And, you know, and come up with a formula metric off, you know, that as far as like a new song. You know, should we be playing this? Should we be maybe playing it less and move on to something else? Is it a burnout factor? Will this cause somebody to tune away from another station? And then they go, what other stations do you listen to? You know, so there's a, you know, like a good 5 or 10 questions that many research companies did to determine the temperature, if you will, of whatever song they were asking about. And, you know, that's how things kept getting played or got dropped. And if they were, depending on the numbers that came from that survey. So, you know, we all think, and people get into radio, music radio, and they are fans to begin with, and then the business kind of takes over. And at some point, you know, as a program director, music director, you know, your tastes kind of have to be put aside, and you're like, okay, there's a good couple dozen people working at the station, and all of our paychecks depend on doing the right thing, which is most listeners, most profit, most sales. You know, keep the machine going. So that was it. But, you know, there were times where, you know, good stations, good programmers would trust their air staff to do something a little special for listeners. And I'm lucky enough that I did get to do some special things before the industry completely changed to extreme predictability.
So during, I gather you're the rock radio DJ for 10, 12 years. During that time, there were a couple of major national events. There was, Russia fell, America invaded Iraq. Did the type of music you played change with the national mood?
Tough to say. You know, I wouldn't say the music necessarily, you know, changed overnight to certain things. You know, I do remember events. I mean, you know, for instance, when the World Series in 1989 between the Giants and A's happened and it was knocked off, you know, my Monterey station was a Giants affiliate and we were getting ready to, the AM was getting ready to broadcast that game and my FM shift was coming up and, you know, the earthquake happened. We were one of the few stations that had a transmitter, so we were back up on air within 10 or 15 minutes, one of the only stations in the area that was back up. And I personally served as a emergency broadcast center for the night. And, you know, we'd play a song or two, and then we'd talk about, you know, events coming in. We were getting phone calls. Other members of the station had gone home to check on their houses and families and pets, and then kind of came back, and we had almost an all-night vigil, and it was very very interesting for the community. I was on the air the night that Princess Diana died and had to make that announcement. I was on the air the day Frank Sinatra died. So sometimes there are some big events to announce, but when we were doing, I remember the Gulf War with Iran and Saddam Hussein in the early 90s, we, you know, we had a campaign just to support the troops and, you know, but there was no special music other than, you know, maybe some of the old protest music of the 60s, like The Doors and Crosby, Stills, and Nash. And, you know, just kind of us commenting on it, what was going on. You know, there wasn't a lot of protest music being written currently, like in the late 80s or 90s. So, you know, go back and get, you know, get the old Kent State song from Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Or, you know, The Doors always seem to, you know, fit that, but no real special music came out during any of those events.
So when you commented about music, were you given a script for that, or you just talked from your general knowledge? How does that work?
General knowledge. That's kind of, you know, what made us unique as far as DJs, you know. And I guess when you decide what kind of broadcaster personality you want to be. And I'll wrap this up. We're about a minute from break. But when you decide, you know, there's folks that are like, I'm going to be an entertainer. I'm kind of a comedian. I like to tell jokes. I'm going to be a morning entertainer person. So there's that person. I kind of like to be someone who is an adjunct to the music. A lot of DJs I enjoyed growing up listening to always had good trivia about the music they played. And then I had a station manager in Monterey who was going over some of my first tapes, and he was like, you know, you're really good at trivia knowledge with all the bands. He's like, never let that go. In fact, you know, go deeper. He's like, your listeners think, you know, you were hanging out with the band last night. They expect these things from you as a personality. So I really made it a point to read up on like every music magazine, fanzine, article, you know, Rolling Stone, everything else similar to that, and try to come up with as much information, which luckily I have an ability to retain it and, you know, pull it out when it was needed. So that was something that I really considered a strength of mine, was just that I had very good ability to recall trivial knowledge about the artists that we played that was slightly different from others. I read a lot of biographies of these people, read a lot of, watch a lot of movies, and again, reading every single article I could get my hands on about the bands we played.
Well, I really appreciate you taking us behind the scene in the rock radio DJ saga. We'll be right back to hear more about your career at this Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Unbar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at CenterpointMedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our excellent guest, Jay Cruz, my producer, who is telling us about the early parts of his career as a professional rock radio DJ. But then after you spent time in Monterey, there was industry consolidation in the late 90s, and you had to switch tracks. Now, I tell my patients that the average person switches careers 5 times in a lifetime. So this happens. So tell me about the transition. Was it difficult? Did you have trouble finding a new job? How did that work?
Well, number one, it was because, it was also kind of one of those things that I kind of had almost an early midlife crisis, not quite, but I'd put all my eggs in one basket into getting into radio and broadcasting, even though a lot of people go, the industry's changing, who knows how long it's going to last. And I think no matter what industry you go into, you kind of get that speech, but it's the industry consolidation in the late 90s happens. I'd been at one station in San Jose. And then after it was taken over ownership-wise, I ended up working for what used to be our competition, and then they went through consolidation. So after having no change for like 30 years in the San Jose market, the two stations that, I was pretty much eligible to work for, the two rock stations, were no longer around. And, basically that, I was going to be forced to move. And I knew a lot of things going on as far as what stations and ownership was just changing too fast and too much. So I took a part-time job that a family friend had going, just helping to assemble like trophies for little league teams and soccer teams. And then I ended up working in sporting goods retail for about a year and a half, just to have employment and, and pay the bills. And after about nearly 2 years of that, I pretty much felt I was losing my sanity and was at the point where if I stick with this, I'm never going to have another opportunity to, do something fun. And coming from a creative background, I just thought, I'm just going to give it a shot and I'm going to move to Los Angeles basically because of the weather and the beaches. And if I have to work at a regular job like I already am, at least I'll have my days off and my weekend, so to speak, to go enjoy the beach and have that aspect of life. And, I had a great time with the radio years and thought, hey, I was lucky to have done that. Here we are with phase number two. And then about a year after I moved to Southern California, working at a retail sporting goods store, Linda McKenzie, owner and founder of HealthyLife.net, came in on a Saturday and was doing some window shopping, looked at a couple golf clubs. I asked her if she needed any help. She didn't buy the golf clubs, but she said, hey, I'm starting a radio station. You have a good voice. Have you ever considered doing radio? And I had to hold my laughter because I'm sitting there going, yeah, I've been in about 16 years of radio up to this point, and sure, I'll check it out. And I've been working for Linda ever since.
So what particularly intrigued you about Healthy Life Radio? What made you interested in it?
I like Linda's idea of the format. I had just been through a format change, basically, a couple of them, which, after a lot of solidarity at the stations I worked at, obviously, you know, I'd had a good run without format change, which is more common in radio to happen. Stations don't usually stay with a format much more than a year or two. And, you know, I liked the idea of her positive message. And one thing I said, yeah, if you stick with it and don't change, it's going to work out and it'll be good. Also, I had been replaced by consolidation and automation, and I knew that I would have an opportunity to at least learn some automated program working here and could be the sort of the power behind the throne, the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, instead of the person who might be susceptible to downsizing like I just had been.
So take us behind the scenes at HealthyLife.net Radio. What do you do as program director? How does your typical day go?
Well, semi-different than, you know, like a traditional program director at other stations where you have a very small and limited air staff and you work very intensely on coaching up the members of their staff and, you know, working on things that are overall focused on the station, depending on campaigns you're doing, promotional stuff. And you kind of work with a smaller group of four or five kind of everyday full-timers and about four or five fill-in part-timers. You got maybe, you know, 5 to 10 people that are kind of your air staff. Here, we have about 30 different hosts. I know that the hosts that come on the station are qualified at what they do individually. You have a lot of expertise in your field. The host on the hour before you does, the host on the hour after you does. What I do is just try to bring in broadcasting 101 things. Remember to say your name. Remember to say the name of your show. Say the name of the network. Say the name of the guest. Remind listeners kind of where they are, as opposed to, you know, just talking to your guest and not really including the listeners in what's happening. You know, you got to sort of move them to the, we're about to take a break. You know, or come, you know, listen to past shows. Check out my guest's, you know, latest book or website. So, you know, reminding people just to kind of do the radio things that aren't natural in speech, and maybe they just haven't had experience in whatever field, you know, you've been in before. Just sort of add radio elements to it and really make sure that our hosts, you know, remember those things. And, you know, occasionally I might hear something that I'll address, and, you know, if I hear something good, I'll address that too in a good way, going, hey, I really like how you do that. And, you know, sometimes a host might come up with a particular issue or thing that they might be struggling with or, you know, want to improve. And, you know, I just have through a lot of people I worked for, you know, I went through a lot of, we used to call them air check meetings, about, you know, once a month, twice a month. We'd bring in a copy of maybe our latest show, you know, in the studios at the stations. Every time you open the mic, there would be a tape recorder that would record when the mic was open. And, you know, basically it would record what you said, and not necessarily the music, because, you know, we're all kind of on a list and that sort of is what it is. But it would give the, you know, program director an opportunity to listen to how you sound on the air and, you know, go over those things and going, oh, you're sounding really good here. I like the energy. I like the way you're doing this. Or, you know, hey, you're repeating yourself here. Let's be brief. Remember, you know, it's not up to you to repeat something. If you don't think a listener didn't hear it, you know, it's up to them to hear it. You don't want to do certain things because, you know, you want to be more economic with time or what have you. And there's, you know, sometimes there's different times where you have to kind of punt and freewheel and go a little longer than just normal. So, you know, just a lot of experience I have from that and being able to answer the questions that hosts may have and give them a kind of a lifeline and some insight into how to do things easier and in a professional way. I think that helps our station stand out above and different from other competing internet stations who, you know, might have somebody who can record and edit the show, but maybe doesn't have the experience of how to coach and be a better broadcaster, which I add to our station, I think, in a big way.
Well, I've certainly appreciated your teaching me many of these skills. So I know some hosts have live call-ins. Is that still happening?
Yes, some do. The interesting thing, and we'll probably pick this up a little bit more, is live phone calls and social media have sort of had a clash and a changing of the uniform, changing of the guard. And I could comment on that a little bit more when we come back after our next break.
I think that's a great thing to pick up. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming Attraction, Life Guide for Teens, Harnessing Your Inner Power to Be Healthy, Happy, and Confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. Our guest, Jay Cruz, is telling us behind the scenes at HealthyLife.net. And you made some very interesting comment that social media and live call-ins intersect in an interesting way. So please explain.
Okay. You know, with like music formats kind of being the exception, and I don't even know if music formats are so viable now because everybody has a smartphone or access to some computer where you can go on, there's a good 5 or 6, 7 or more, apps, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, Tidal, YouTube Music, where you can go on and pick out a playlist of virtually any song that's been recorded. We're going back to Muddy Waters and John Coltrane of the 1940s, old jazz and blues people, up to independent artists who might be 18 years old and just picked up the guitar 2 years ago and just made their first release. You can find everybody on these musical aggregates. So I don't know if people are listening so much to radio for new music exposure. However, talk radio, which used to pretty much count on, let's throw out a talk radio topic, and they would count on it being controversial and knowing that, they'd get a pretty good split on the percentage of listeners. Half my listeners will be into it, half my listeners will be against it. And I'm going to sit here and let them sort of fight it out, let them build up the passion and the reaction. A listener hears one guy who's, has a point of view about something and they have a radically different point of view. Now they want to get on the phone and counterpoint to what the last person just said. And with radio, there's, you know, guys like me. I used to be a phone screener. And I'd be like, okay, we'll have you on the air, but we have, you know, maybe we have a commercial break. And then we have to do news for 3 minutes and then another commercial break. And you might be hold for 15, 20 minutes till you actually get on air. Well, that passion that you had 20 minutes ago might have cooled off, and maybe you're not so excited about, you know, commenting. Now, take the same thing with social media. Person or a site decides, let's put out a controversial topic. Pick one. There's a number of them. And, you know, many of them were pretty split right down the middle. And they just go ahead and post a question about a thing, and next thing you know, people who maybe don't know each other that are mutual friends of yours are fighting on your page. Or, you know, if it's a public page, like a news page, you know, you got people commenting on the news of the day. And, you know, now it's down to almost like, you know, college football teams. And, you know, of course, you can't stand your rival. And, you know, nowadays that's what politics has been. We used to be able to have discourse and conversations and debates about certain topics. Now it's like you're either conservative or you're liberal, you're blue or you're red, you're in this or you're out, and there doesn't seem to be as much debate and discourse as there used to be. But, you know, bottom line, I think that's why a lot of people feel that social media can be toxic, is that the people with opposing opinions will get on there and be kind of brutal. You know, and, you know, might even attack you and not even know you for your opinion, where, you know, that used to be talk radio. You know, Rush Limbaugh was really good at that, and he got a lot of ratings by basically stirring up people's emotions. And now Facebook is stirring up people's emotions, and you don't have to go through a phone screener. You just log on, you see something, you post. There's no 15-minute wait for the radio format to find space for you to talk.
So do you get less call-ins these days?
Yes, call-ins are few and far between. How often do people talk to each other, friends, family, colleagues on the phone? I know people call my phone, they go to the voicemail. Next thing you know, I'm getting a text message. It's like, well, you could have just texted me and not called if you just wanted to say had a one-question thing, you know. So people don't call as often as they do. People don't answer phones as often as they did. Occasionally people will get some good call-ins, and they're typically, you know, for thing astrology shows, people want to know their sign. People call in for psychic readings. You know, Linda has some people that call in on that. And, you know, we have some other hosts that do get some good call-ins. However, it's not just you open up a mic and people flock to you because you're just this magic personality. You have to grow that garden. And that's something I know from, again, back in my earliest career as a phone screener. You know, I screen phone calls. Our morning guys would record phone calls and maybe use them later in the show, maybe use them tomorrow. They wouldn't necessarily go live now. So a lot of what you hear as far as phone calls on commercial radio can be canned, staged, or pre-recorded. I know a lot of people have heard of Jimmy Kimmel. He's quite a successful late night talk show host now, and Adam Carolla was a former partner of his. Well, those two guys started as interns at KROQ. As morning show interns, they would call in and be comedic personalities. They would do impersonations of people that were maybe in the news to do parodies of things for the Kevin and Bean morning show. And, you know, they just kind of kept going until they eventually got their own TV and radio shows and late night shows. So there's always... radio is still showbiz, you know, so there's a little bit of cloak and dagger and sleight of hand going on. Even many stations make it feel like it's live and spontaneous, which a little bit more than movies and TV, where there's so much more production. On radio, you can be one person and run a show and have it be very instantaneous if it's live, as opposed to, you know, doing a TV or a movie, where you've got makeup, wardrobe, lights, everything has to look a certain way as opposed to just sounding a certain way. So I like radio. It's a little more immediate, and I don't know. I just prefer it.
Do you think that talk shows can play a role in bridging our national divides? Can they somehow talk in a way that say, hey, listen to each other?
I think they can if people are willing to listen. We're at a time now where, I have learned from a lot of, personally, I've learned from a lot of talk show hosts or subject matter that maybe wasn't something I was in agreement with. Maybe I was able to hear somebody really lay out a good argument or many good points that maybe what I was thinking wasn't necessarily all the information or maybe wasn't correct from what I knew at that time. So I think talk show hosts can certainly do that. It's a matter of the talk radio listener is open to being open-minded to a new, you know, there's a quote from the Big Lebowski, you know, new information has come to light. and now I have to make with this new information, now I have a new decision to make. Am I still going to be rooted in the previous line of thinking, or am I going to change my line of thinking because new information has come to light? So I think talk show hosts can do that. It's a matter of the listeners being open to change.
Yes, this is a national issue. We've talked about with a number of my guests recently about how to help people heal, how to help our nation heal. Because we're now going into a new administration coming in, and hopefully we can move to the center. This nation has been governed by the extremes for a while, and I think media has contributed to that, and maybe media can also be part of the solution.
I have an extra comment when we come back from the break about that, too.
I'd love to hear you. Thank you. So this is the Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com. or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California, and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. Our guest, Jay Cruz, who is telling us a lot of information about media and behind the scenes. And you mentioned that something that you'd like to talk about, how media could help out.
Well, back in, up until somewhere in the mid-1990s, in the Bill Clinton presidential administration, one of the things he did was he eliminated something called the Fairness Doctrine. Now, the Fairness Doctrine was something that the FCC had out there. Basically, it had more to do with, you know, local TV and radio that might, say, have a guy who's, or a candidate, male or female, come on that was running for local election, maybe state election, what have you. And, you know, maybe for whatever reason, they like this particular candidate. Well, that candidate might have an opponent who was going, hey, how did my opponent get on here? And, you know, you guys talk great about him. I deserve equal time. There was a law called the Equal Time Doctrine or the Fairness Doctrine that you, as a broadcaster, must adhere to. In the 90s, that got eliminated, deregulated, whatever the proper term is. And shortly after that, with cable and other broadcasting content needing content, you know, that's how the conservative TV stations like Fox and Fox News came out, and the liberal stations like MSNBC. And, you know, they're going to talk about their point of view as opposed to doing a fair and balanced thing. If you tune in to MSNBC, you know they're going to, you know, talk about the liberal side and the Democrats. If you tune into Fox News, they're talking about the Republicans and how bad the Democrats are. You know, so that has really kind of got it to where, you know, people want to watch or listen to the news that they feel comfortable with, and whatever side they feel comfortable with, that's all they listen to. So everyone's trying to be informed and stay up to date, but they're only hearing one side of the story. If you hear both sides of the story, then you can make an educated decision. You might still feel the way you do, but now you have more information and data to make that information from. Nowadays, people are really only hearing one side. I don't know if there's many people that watch both networks with equal interest to get both sides of the story.
Now, in the recent election cycle, I was aware that Kamala Harris appeared on Saturday Night Live, and then NBC showed Trump in the NASCAR race the next day to give him equal time. So there's still some equal time rules in effect?
That was an interesting thing, because Kamala Harris came on, and it was a parody skit. There's an actress, Maya Rudolph, who has a physical resemblance to Kamala Harris, and Saturday Night Live has traditionally had some member of the cast, either current or past, that they can, you know, Dana Carvey did George Bush impersonations for many years. And, you know, Maya Rudolph seemed like a natural to impersonate Kamala Harris. There was a skit where she was talking to the mirror. Kamala Harris was the other side of the mirror. It was interesting. Yes, immediately people were crying about equal time, which doesn't exist anymore. Yet NBC, I think, did the right thing by putting on a feature with Donald Trump the next day so that there wasn't any real controversy about that. So they kind of handled it by, you know, not letting it really become an issue, even though, you know, technically they could have gone the way they wanted to, but they, I think, did the right thing by, you know, handling it by, again, putting him on as well on a different subject, on a different show.
Can you tell us why the Fairness Doctrine was taken away? It seems like a step backwards, the way you describe it.
You know, that's a good question. If I ever meet Bill Clinton, that'll probably be a good question to ask him. You know, there are some other things that kind of went on with broadcasting as well. When I mentioned consolidation and deregulation, that also happened. I think it was a big move by the broadcasting industry that maybe lobbied for certain change. One of the changes was, you know, a particular ownership group could only have, say, one TV, one radio, maybe one newspaper in any given city, so that they weren't, you know, controlling all the media in one place. And then that got deregulated where they were able to buy multiple and own multiple stations as long as they didn't go over a certain, like, 40% of the market, you know. So what that did is it really it eliminated the small independent broadcasters. Maybe let's take maybe a guy like me who worked their way up and then, you know, made money in broadcasting, put together a ownership group of other people who had made money, and then we went in and bought a radio station and ran it because, you know, you always think you can do a better job than the people you work for until you're running it yourself. But it really eliminated, you know, a lot of the people that were coming up independent broadcast ownership, and it got to the big companies, the CBS, the NBCs, you know, Clear Channel, and companies that just own massive amounts of, you know, broadcasting space. And I'm pretty sure it was those companies that, you know, did some lobbying or what have you to make it go that way, because they'd wanted that for a long time. They finally got what they wanted.
Because maybe that would be something would nice to reinstate as a fairness doctrine. That might help.
Oh, I fully agree. And I also think on Facebook, take away the share button, because if you have to come up with your own content and use your own words, you know, and not share a news article from that news agency that you know is going to upset half your friends, you know, if you got to come up with your own take, people are going to spend less time doing that. But the easy of sharing a sensationalistic story, it just kind of makes it go more viral. So I think taking away the share button and maybe reinstating the fairness doctrine could solve some existential angst that we're dealing with in these times.
Well, maybe some of our listeners can move that ball forward if it's in their bailiwick. So, you know, my last segment, I usually ask the guests if there's any tips they would like to give the audience based on their life experiences to improve the audience's life. Is there any one or two tips that you could share with us?
Become a better listener, no matter who you are, what line of work you're in, or, you know, so much about being a successful radio host or talk show host, or so much in so many ways of life, is being a good listener. You know, I mean, this is an industry where we broadcast, but I need to pay attention during an interview to what you say, so I don't just go off my agenda. Or if I'm, you know, listening to you and a host do a show, I might hear something that's great. I might go, hey, that was a really good point you brought up. Or, you know, hey, maybe that wasn't the best thing you brought up. Not you in particular. You're pretty good. But, you know, just being a good listener. And people really appreciate being heard and listened to. And I think right now, everyone has an opinion. Everyone has something to say. And, yeah, sometimes maybe you don't want to hear that, and, you know, there's ways you can say, okay, I'm really not in the mood to hear about politics right now, but, you know, I do want to give you the chance to say what you want to say and hear you. So I think that's one of the biggest lessons I learned in radio and being a musician, is that listening is just as important as broadcasting or, you know, playing your part of the song. So I would say become a better listener if you can.
I think that's a great tip. I would tell you that people who listen well are rated by their friends as good conversationalists, much better than people who talk a lot. Because when you let the other person talk, they feel heard and then think you speak well. Which is ironic, isn't it?
It is. It's kind of backwards, but it's so true. And I see it, and I agree with it 100%. But we do have to wrap up. This has been a lot of fun, Ron. Thank you very much, Dr. Ron.
I thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate you. I appreciate the audience. And I wish all of us an excellent day and future. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.